most people, when they breathe in, it's more of a, and it should be down here. There should be no shoulders moving. If you're moving your shoulders, you're upper chest breathing and you're not engaging the diaphragm. The diaphragm has so many, the biggest thing it does is it stimulates the vagus nerve, which is the longest nerve in our body, which stimulates the body into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is our calm, rest, and repair.
You're listening to My Evolved Life, a podcast that simplifies health and fitness and helps you maximize your life. My name is Vuna Nguyen, and I'm the creator of the Evolution Training System. We're so lucky to be living in the information age, meaning it's easier than ever to access information and find answers to any questions you may have. But isn't it confusing when you read information that's conflicting, or worse yet, just sounds wrong? I'll be sitting down with industry professionals to give you clarity and leave you with tangible actions you can take immediately to improve your physical, mental, and psychological health. On today's show, I have Lorraine Clifford. Lorraine got diagnosed with cancer at the young age of 36, but that propelled health to the forefront of her life. Thankfully, today, she is cancer-free, but through those extraordinary circumstances, she developed a passion to help others understand how to better their lives, change their circumstances, and to improve their quality of life. Today, Lorraine does that through her company, Breathway, where she helps others optimize their breathing and help restore their body's natural ability to heal. Breathing is something that we simply don't talk about enough and don't think about enough. So I'm super excited to have her on the show today. With that, Lorraine, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here too. The more I get to do things like this, the more the information gets out there, the more people are actually coming back right here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Breathing. It is so, so, so important. Simply put, you stop breathing, you die. Can't get any more blunt than that. But when we think about the necessities of life, the basic needs of a human, we tend to talk about things like food, water, shelter, clothing, but we don't talk about breathing. The average person, as far as I know, breathes about or takes about 15 breaths per minute, which extrapolates to over 23,000 times a day or over 8.5 million times a year. So we breathe a lot. But all of that breathing happens subconsciously, so we're not actively thinking about it. So through the lens of a breathing expert, Lorraine, why do we need to start thinking more about our breathing habits?
Because our breathing connects body, mind, and spirit. It really, when we can slow down our breathing, we get more in tune with things. The bottom line, scientifically, what's happening is when we slow down our breathing, we actually end up capturing more CO2 in the bloodstream. And when there's more CO2 available in the bloodstream, the oxygen doesn't bond as tight to the red blood cell. So it offloads properly. When we are over-breathing, we're breathing too fast, too much of a volume, off-gassing too much CO2, that oxygen hangs on to the red blood cell and doesn't get delivered properly. And when we're looking at breathing, It's systemic. It affects every cell in the body. So we need to bring that attention back. The first thing that changes when we are in stress is our breathing.
Right. Right. So when we're in stress, you're suggesting that we're either holding our breath or we're getting into that rapid breathing. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, like if I came up behind you and I startled you, what's the first thing you're going to do?
I'm going to gasp for air.
You're going to take that big breath. Yeah. Everything's going to go tight. Your eyes are going to go wide. And that is perfect if you need to run or fight. But it's not perfect when we're just doing life. We should be more like deer. You know, I'm walking down Fish Creek Park, and I come upon a deer. He looks, his ears go up, and then he says, oh, it's just somebody walking back down. Right. But we don't. We get stressed, and we don't come back to our breathing to rectify it. So our body gets a new set point, and we run at that new set point. And then we get stressed again, and we run at that set point. It takes a 30% change in our breathing before we manifest any symptoms.
Okay.
Our body is really good at keeping us upright and functioning.
So when you say symptoms, what kind of symptoms are we looking at when we have poor breathing habits or patterns?
It could be high blood pressure. It could be headaches, migraines, anxiety, depression, allergies, asthma, sleeping problems, snoring, sleep apnea. And actually, the Buteyko is the method that I teach, and it was developed by a medical doctor. And he linked breathing as the root cause of over 200 different genetically disposed. No.
Yeah, it's okay. Like diseases or?
Yes.
Yeah.
200 different diseases. So when we're not breathing properly, we are more susceptible to whatever we're genetically disposed to.
I see. So if we're really going to break it down, I know you kind of talked about this earlier, but if you were to break down the individual breath, let's really get into that detail.
Okay.
What is happening beyond the inhalation and the exhalation? What is happening in here?
Most of us, when we're breathing, we're upper chest breathing. Upper chest breathing connects us to our sympathetic nervous system right away.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us are breathing more through the mouth rather than the nose. Mouth breathing connects us to our sympathetic nervous right away. So we want to, and our sympathetic nervous system, if anybody doesn't know, is your fight or flight. It's a low-grade connection, but it's constant. It's kind of like if I was walking and I got a pebble in my shoe and I decided just to walk with it. I mean, eventually I'm going to have a blister and it's going to pop and
right. It'll
take time to heal. But if I took that out, if I rectified the problem, then it wouldn't escalate to symptoms.
So as I suggested earlier, breathing is one of those things that we just do naturally where we don't have to think about breathing. It's just subconscious. So based on what you just said, by habit, we just breathe through our mouths. How do we start to go through that process of rewiring so that we're breathing properly through our nose?
Well, for people who are transitioning from mouth breathing to nose breathing, you have to slow down. You have to slow down.
Just to clarify, when you say slow down, do you mean your movements or in life?
Everything.
Okay.
So you have to check in on your stress level. How are you managing that? And, you know, maybe you need to start looking at your lifestyle so you can fit some way of de-stressing. And coming back to the breath is the perfect way. A lot of people will do yoga or meditation, which are really good, but it's only for that time. What I'm teaching people is, how do you breathe every breath? How do you function like that?
When you say learn to breathe every breath, what does that look like? What does that mean? What are the techniques associated with that?
Using the diaphragm. Most of us aren't belly breathers. Babies are born innate belly breathers, nose breathers, and then something happens. You know, it could be maybe baby was tongue-tied and the tongue's not going up to the roof of the mouth. And then they wouldn't be able to suckle properly for breastfeeding, so bottle would be the optimum way for them to be fed.
Yeah.
I mean, the tongue moves differently for bottle than it does for breast. And then the tongue has this habit of swallowing differently. And when the swallow is different, the growth and development of the facial structure changes because the tongue's no longer going up to the roof of the mouth like it should. So the face becomes more narrow and the cheeks become more flat and the chin grows more down rather than wide.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So these patterns are, they are developed very, very early.
Yeah.
Before you're born.
After you're born. Yeah.
Right. But shortly after you're born.
Your sinuses don't fully develop until about age 4.
Okay.
So if you're a baby who's having some breathing problems, the sinuses aren't going to develop properly.
Let's just elaborate on that. Is there a way to detect that your baby isn't breathing properly?
If their mouth is open. There was a book that was published in 1870 by George Catlin called Shut Your Mouth and Save Your Life. Now, he was from the American West. And when he was about 34, he decided he wanted to go and live with the natives because he thought that they were very proud people. They walked tall. And at that time, white people thought that the natives were very sickly because the natives that came into the white settlements, they tended to get sick. But it's because they took on the lifestyle of the white people.
Mm.
The natives who stayed and did life the way their ancestors did were very healthy people. Matter of fact, the natives used to call white people black mouth because every time they saw them moving and approaching, their mouth was open. Most of us do a really good job keeping our lips together when we're sitting.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're moving, that's when you really have to come back to, what am I doing?
Right.
How am I doing this?
Right.
When I first learned about this, I was working for a forward-thinking orthodontist. And I remember thinking, and he wanted us to take this buteyko breathing. And I remember thinking, I'm a nose breather and I know it. And I had a lot of aha moments. You know, when I was bending down even just to pick up a paper, my mouth was open. When I was exercising, for sure my mouth was open. When I was showering, my mouth was open. Putting makeup on, my mouth was open. It was like, this is crazy. My mouth is open way more than what I think it's open. And if we think about the difference between nose breathing and mouth breathing, even if my mouth is open just a little, we actually have nasal dominance all day, all night. So one nostril is always freer than the other. So we're breathing in, you know, a straw and a half, let's say.
Okay.
I could probably put 6 straws across my mouth, open just a little bit. So if I'm sitting there watching TV or driving, you know.
Would you say that that is a psychological reason that we just tend to gravitate to our mouth?
When we don't bring our attention to it, yeah.
Let's really talk about that then. How do we start? What are the methods that you would use to start bringing attention to that breathing?
Well, first of all, come to the awareness that, you know what? You have some habits of mouth breathing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the alcoholic who finally says, yeah, I need help. You know, you're not aware of it until you become aware of it.
Yeah.
You don't know, right? So really watch yourself. Be a detective. How are you doing your life? How often is that mouth open, really?
And you're right. When it comes to breathing, the only times we really, really think about the quality of our breath is exercise. You mentioned that already. Yoga, you mentioned that already. Meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, we are not very actively, proactively thinking about that.
No.
So let's talk about exercise and yoga. Why is it so important when we're exerting force or exerting energy that we are even more conscious of what breathing?
It's because the oxygen needs to be delivered properly, especially then. Because if I'm out doing a marathon and I'm mouth breathing, I mean, I remember watching a documentary and they said you could get a Charlie horse in your leg, or maybe feeling like I'm going to throw up or faint. I mean, those are symptoms of the oxygen not being delivered properly. Mm. But we're not aware that that's a symptom telling us something.
Right.
And when I exercise now, I will slow down if I feel I need to breathe through my mouth.
Okay.
Because it's an indication that I'm not at that level yet. I do a treadmill workout once a week, and it's with a bunch of ladies that are probably 20 years younger than me. And I'm able to do that nose breathing, but it's because I'm aware of what's happening in my body. They're not.
Would you say that it's a pretty correctable flaw?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we all have the ability to do this at any age.
Going back to that deep belly breathing, what does or how would you cue somebody through a proper breath?
Okay, so most people, when they breathe in, it's more of a... And it should be down here. There should be no shoulders moving. If you're moving your shoulders, you're upper chest breathing, and you're not engaging the diaphragm. The diaphragm has so many... the biggest thing it does is it stimulates the vagus nerve, which is the longest nerve in our body, which stimulates the body into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is our calm, rest, and repair. That's where we should be all day. You know, unless someone cuts me off on the deer foot and then I do a little bit like this and then I come back.
Right. You were saying earlier that we find this level, something happens, you get shocked, and you have this new normal, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Right? And then you get shocked again, and then you have an elevated normal.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find what that normal should actually be?
For each individual?
Generally speaking.
Part of what I do is I teach people how to do a breath hold.
Okay.
And the breath hold is done, it's a gentle breath in, a gentle breath out. And then you hold your breath until you feel the urge to breathe. It's a big difference than holding my breath until I faint.
Right.
So it's getting people in tune with what's going on with the body, and when they feel that sympathetic nervous system rather than the parasympathetic nervous system. I'm good, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good. No, I'm not good right now. I need to breathe. So I help people identify what they feel like when they get there. And then when they're in tune with that, there is actually a measurement that I get them to do. And there are certain measurements that I want to see them at.
I'm curious, going back to the chronic diseases. Mm-hmm. So you said it was one of your forward-thinking orthodontists at the time. You said that there were up to 200 chronic diseases that, mm-hmm. that are a result of poor breathing patterns.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about these patterns? Is it the lack of oxygen that causes these diseases?
Okay, so let's look at diabetes, type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes used to be adult onset. There were no kids getting it. There's kids getting type 2 diabetes, and there's more people being diagnosed with it. When you're in your fight or flight, you get a surge of glucose running through your veins and arteries because you need that instant energy. But if I'm not utilizing it, it's just hanging out there. Mm. So it's taxing my insulin, right? My insulin's trying to take care of that extra surge, and this is happening constant.
Over time, that would affect your pancreas, I assume? If you're just overproducing insulin?
Well, you could get the diagnosis of type 2 diabetes.
Okay.
Yeah. When you're not breathing properly, when you're overbreathing, you're holding your body in that sympathetic nervous system low grade. When I go to sleep, I'm habitually breathing the way I normally do. So I don't allow my body to get into that deep sleep. So, I mean, nowadays, we're in this fast-paced life. oh my gosh, we don't take time for anything. It's a do-do. It's not a come back and relax for a minute. You know, there are more accidents due to sleepy drivers now than there are alcoholics, because a sleepy driver has no reaction time.
Right.
No, more fatal accidents, pardon me.
Right. Yeah. I really want to get into that. I did share with you when you and I had that phone conversation that I'm plagued with very, very dry mouth. So outside of that, I would consider myself to be very, very healthy. It is very much an annoyance because for things like this or speaking engagements, I have to use my voice a lot. And with a dry mouth, it is so, so difficult. So this is, I haven't been to a doctor for ages, but I went in for this because it was bothering me that much. The doctor, he couldn't figure it out, but he did suggest that I get a sleep test done. And I was tested positive for sleep apnea. So this is something that's very, very near and dear to me. How does your breathing pattern or my daily breathing patterns or through the course of the day, how does that contribute to my inability to sleep and sleep apnea?
When you're over breathing, you're bringing in too much air, which dries out the mouth. It just does. Even if you're over breathing through your nose, because you can do that. You just, it's too quick. It's too fast. And when your mouth is dry, you're not able to swallow properly.
Right.
You're not able to digest starches either. Amylase is produced in your saliva, which is the first thing that starts to break down starches. So we're seeing more people with wheat intolerance, like gluten intolerance, because they're overbreathing. It could be. I mean, it could be a lot of other things, but this could be part of it.
Right.
So as far as sleep goes, when you get into that pattern of overbreathing and you fall asleep, generally with sleep apnea, there's snoring that happens first.
Yeah.
So we get into, there's four stages of sleep. We get into those, the deeper parts of stage three. And in stage four is where our body goes absolutely limp. And it's our body that's in control. We're not. And as we get into that deeper part of stage three, and most people who snore are sleeping on their back, the mouth drops open.
That's me.
Yeah. So the mouth drops open, and you start to breathe through your mouth because everything's gone limp here. And then because the tissue inside has gone limp and you're breathing excessively, it starts to vibrate. And then over time, it starts to collapse, and you have an apnea.
My test results, they, you know, being not being a professional in this field, you know, it was kind of subjective the way that I interpreted the results. But I believe at my maximum, I think I stopped breathing 13 times in a minute or something like that, which is pretty high. What is a normal for the average person? Is it zero?
Yeah, you should, yeah, it should be zero. Because if you're in that calm breath, and the ideal way to sleep would be on your side.
Okay.
Left side would be best, because the lungs, the right lung is a little bit bigger. It's got three lobes. The left one only has two because the heart's there. Yeah, so left would be best. Right would be next. Tummy would be next. Back is worse.
Okay. Yeah. So
sleep position
can
make a big difference.
Yeah. I hear that a lot, and that's very, very interesting, because as much as I want to sleep on my side, so you're suggesting that the left side is better than the right, which is better than the back, but naturally, even if I start sleep on the left side, I can't control what's happening in the middle of the night. I may just gravitate back onto my back. What can you do to make sure you stay on your left side or your right?
Some people will take like an old nylon, like a lady's nylon, and put like a tennis ball in there and wrap it around their waist. Tennis ball is at the back as soon as they start to, I'm not going to want to lean there. Or you could prop pillows. Or you could get one of those really long pillows and have one of your right leg over top of it to, you know, help you in kind of holding it.
Huh. I may not try the body pillow thing, but that tennis ball, that seems like a pretty simple remedy. You roll over on top and naturally you're just going to kick yourself right back onto your left side.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So for me, for the next question, we've talked about the symptoms of poor breathing. You've also suggested that we can drastically improve our quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, for instance, now I'm blessed in the way that I feel like even though I'm not sleeping that well per se, I have a lot of energy. But in theory, if I did sleep well as a result of better breathing habits, I could have even more energy.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, what are the benefits of having proper breathing patterns?
You digest things better. You know, when you're breathing properly. I had a lady who was on a CPAP machine for 12 years, and she was working with a friend of mine who's a nutritionist, and they had started some weight loss, but not a whole lot. I think she'd lost about 10 pounds, and they'd been working about 6 months. And she came in to see me because she wanted to get off her CPAP machine.
Mm-hmm.
And she was willing to do the exercises. And she did amazing, just amazing. So she was able to come off her CPAP machine. And she, in that process, lost 45 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because when you're breathing properly, you're digesting properly.
Wow.
Yeah, you're eliminating properly. The diaphragm, when it moves, it stimulates all those inner organs and gets them moving.
So even though I consider myself to be, you know, not necessarily a professional in all facets of health, but I keep myself fairly educated. So I try to know as much as I can. But even then, I wouldn't have drawn the correlation between breathing and the quality of your body's ability to digest food. So that's fascinating. And it's something that I'm sure the average person would never think about. It's never going to cross their minds. What I do want to go back to, and we, you know, on this show, we do tend to talk about children quite a bit because our habits are formed very, very early.
Mm-hmm.
So talking about breathing habits, you did mention earlier that poor breathing habits form when you're a child or a baby could lead to deformations, you know, different physical features. But what else is there? Could it contribute to any early onset diseases or?
Well, if you're not breathing well as a child, we talked about the facial,
right?
The face isn't going to grow properly. Thus the airway is going to be smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a lot of kids nowadays, there's a lot of kids being diagnosed with ADD and ADHD and being put on a medication. And really, it's a breathing problem that created a sleep problem that creates the symptoms that look like that. You know, and so we really have to address everything when we're looking, especially your kids. You want to make sure that they're being dealt with as best as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you want them to be as healthy as they can. Being put on a medication at a very young age, lifelong, isn't always the answer. And I'm not against medication, don't get me wrong. You know, if that's the true cause, then that's the true cause. But in my opinion, I would be investigating a whole bunch of other things. Like, are there any allergies or sensitivities? What's causing them to not breathe properly?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are the adenoids so inflamed or infected that they need some attention?
This is a really interesting point, ADHD, ADD. And I want to say something that I admit is very opinionated and maybe uneducated.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that there is an overdiagnosis of ADD, ADHD. It almost feels like it's the de facto cop-out kind of answer. You don't, you know, if a kid is hyperactive, you just immediately assume he's ADHD, he has ADHD, and you put him on medicine or on meds, right? So when you do that as at large, as an industry, when we do that, it takes away the, it really blurs those lines. You don't know what ADHD actually is. Mm-hmm. And without putting words into your mouth, it does sound like you believe that a lot of children and adults as well are being misdiagnosed with ADHD.
I totally believe it. I totally believe it, yeah. And it's sad because we're numbing those people, as the ones on medication anyways, we're numbing right. them. And the other ones who aren't on medication, they have this stamp on their forehead. And so when they feel like they're acting like that, well, it's okay.
Right.
You know, because that's who I am.
So very much like, maybe not to the same degree, but like mental health, there is a big stigma around it. There is a stigma with having ADHD as well, mm-hmm. especially as a kid. When you're labeled with anything, you are different, immediately different, right?
Yeah.
And that definitely could cause long-term issues.
You bet.
No, that's unbelievable. So what else? When we talked on the phone, you said that you talked about the liver quite a bit and its ability to detoxify. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, our liver is our biggest detoxifying organ as far as the rest of the body goes. But our lungs are actually responsible for 70% of our detoxification process. So our breath, when we're able to slow it down, we actually allow these inner organs to be able to do the work that they're supposed to do. When we're in this constant fight or flight, nothing's working properly. People with high blood pressure, when there's not enough CO2 in the bloodstream, what happens is that smooth muscle in our body constricts. So smooth muscle in our body are our veins and arteries. Mm-hmm. All of our inner organs are smooth muscle. So everything's getting tight. And if we're looking at high blood pressure, you know, I'm in this very stressful situation, whatever it is. I go to the doctor and he says, yeah, your blood pressure is through the roof. You need medication. And I'm not against that. I'm just saying that, you know, temporary, yeah. Get your blood pressure down to where it needs to be. Now, let's look at lifestyle. How did that happen? Why did you end up with that?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about corrective action. You said that the first step is having the awareness that mm-hmm. you're breathing through your mouth. Mm-hmm. Let's assume that they've identified that.
Okay.
Yes, I am somebody who regularly breathes through my mouth. Is there an exercise, so short of seeing somebody like you, a breathing expert, what are the exercises that they can undertake at home to start to repair those breathing patterns?
Well, usually if you're breathing more through the mouth, it's because there's an obstruction in the sinuses or in the nasal passage somewhere. So I teach a nose clearing exercise. So the nose clearing exercise can be done at any time as much as you need. So you're going to take a gentle breath in, a gentle breath out. You're going to block your nose and nod your head until you feel that first urge to breathe. And then you're going to open the nose, keep the lips together. Because we're trying to capture more CO2. CO2 is captured on the exhale. And it's, you know, a lot of people think, no, how could that be? But it is. Because it's coming from within. It's not coming from without. It's coming from within.
Right.
Yeah.
Would that be a pretty comprehensive exercise? You do that 5 to 10 minutes a day, and slowly over time you'll be more aware. Or is there something else?
Well, there's lots. Yeah. There's actually a lot of exercises. But I always, always want people to spend anywhere from 2 to 5 minutes 6 times a day coming back to their breath.
Okay.
So that could be when I'm driving. I could easily do that when I'm driving. How am I breathing? Am I belly breathing? Am I using my nose? Can I slow it down?
That's something, certainly something I'll keep in mind. Like for somebody like myself, I'm in my car probably 3-4 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So I drive a lot. So that's definitely time. I'm always bored when I'm driving. So that's definitely something I can keep in mind and practice.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure I'm an upper chest breather.
Yeah.
There's no question about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you generally today, how are you delivering your message? Is it on stage? Is it through courses? What are you doing right now to get breath way out?
I do things like this.
Great.
And I'm going to be teaching a class for the Calgary Teachers Convention coming up in February.
Mm, cool.
Which is pretty cool, yeah. So I get myself in front of people like that and different networking and marketing places. You know, if I have an opportunity to get up and talk,
they'll
I'm saying, yeah, pick me.
Yeah.
And as far as teaching goes, when it comes to adults, I teach 5 2-hour classes for them to rectify their breathing. Generally, it's one class a week.
Wow.
It doesn't have to be like that. It could be taught quicker, but I like people to get some benefit and some feeling good that they're doing the exercises that I've asked them to do before I add on.
So who would your general demographic be in these classes?
I would say most people, like about 30, 35, okay, up to even 80. Yeah. Usually the older people already have these big reasons why they're taking it.
Right.
Someone like yourself, it's just, it's come to your attention. It hasn't affected your lifestyle.
Just yet.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm sure we're just scratching the surface of breathing and its importance in our lives. If somebody wants to learn more about it, how could they find you and how could they find more information about Breathway?
Okay, so I am on breathway.com, and I'm on Facebook, Breathway, and Instagram, Change Your Breathing. That's pretty much, and LinkedIn, that's where you found me.
Yeah, absolutely, yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the only social media that I do. People can phone. I still pick up my phone. Yeah.
That's quite a few mediums. They'll find you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. So it sounds like you have a pretty big venture. You're educating the public about breathing. If there's anything else on your plate, what would that be? What's next for you?
What's next for me?
Yeah.
Well, right now I'm a sole entrepreneur working all by myself.
Okay.
And, you know, I know that once enough people realize that there is something so simple that can change their health for the better quite quickly.
Yeah.
I think the more the word gets out, the more people I'll be seeing. Now I'm going to have to expand and actually have people, teaching this. And then I'm hoping that I'll be able to have, you know, if you come to me because you've got sleep apnea, then I want you to see the one who's teaching sleep apnea.
All right.
Right. You know, right now I'm doing it all, mm-hmm, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's working.
So that did pique my curiosity. You said it can repair quite quickly. Now it sounds like you're teaching 5 sessions of 2 hours each, so that's 10 hours.
Yeah.
Is that what you would say? Is that how you would define quite quickly, about 10 hours?
Well, 10 hours and you feel the difference.
Okay.
It depends on, like, if I'm teaching somebody who's had asthma since they're 2, they're going to feel a whole lot better after taking the class.
Right.
But is that the end result? No, they probably want to be able to manage their asthma with their breathing. There was a double-blind study here in Calgary using asthmatics. Okay. Where 90% of them were able to manage their asthma with their breathing. Isn't that amazing?
Incredible. Incredible.
So not having to take their medication.
I feel like I can assume what your answer to the next question is going to be. If an individual is living an evolved life, what does that look like?
I think people who are living an evolved life are searching for answers to become better, body, mind, and spirit. Like it's all three, and I think it brings the world together more. because we're reaching out to find answers.
That's a great answer. I'm actually surprised you didn't say breathing better. but you're right. It is very, very holistic. There's more than just physical. There's more than just mental. It is very, very a complete circle.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, because it connects our, in my opinion, breathing is number one.
Yeah. No, that was fantastic. I think we've learned a lot here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem
at all. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of My Evolved Life. Guys, if you found any value at all, and I'm sure you did, make sure to subscribe to the podcast. If you have any questions about this or any other episode, or you want to be a guest or recommend a guest, send us a message on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn at EvolutionVN. Oh, if you think your friends would enjoy this podcast, please make sure to share it with them. Until next time, live your evolved life.